Good morning and welcome to the roundtable panel for this Friday, the 27th of May. Very nice to have you with us on this this beautiful Friday. It is the unofficial kickoff to summer this weekend, the Memorial Day weekend, and it certainly feels that it's a beautifully warm, sunny day. It just everything feels great. Which may be why there was absolutely no one on the road today coming into work. Everyone is. But we're here, and that's all that counts. And we hope you're there listening and will take part in our conversation, roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm fine. I just wanted everybody to know that WAMC has suffered a real loss. The guy who gave us our chance to have this radio station, Dean Bob Friedlander, Robert Friedlander, MD, a great guy, an expert in endometriosis, passed. And he said yes. When we had no money, we had nothing there, he saw a glimmer of hope. They had to give it up, the radio station. And I said, he said to us, if you can do it, you can have it. You can have a board. We did it, and what you see now is because Bob Friedlander had the foresight and the decency to do that. I just wanted to mention that this morning.
Sad news, and thank you for sharing that. I didn't know that actually, so thank you. Let us go on and welcome Barbara Smith to the program, author, activist, and we are lucky to have her join us each and every Friday. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning, everybody.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
And Rich Honan is with us, corporate attorney and all-around nice guy. Contrary to the mail, all-around nice guy.
Contrary to everybody who actually knows me.
No, that's not true. Good morning.
Good morning.
Always good to have you here. And let's get to the... the actual topics, and again, we welcome you to join us, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We begin this morning with, we haven't spent a lot of time on Donald Trump this week. That was on purpose, but we will try to today kind of catch up a little bit. A lot of things are happening in the Trump camp. First of all, according to the Associated Press, he has gotten enough delegates to have the nomination. And did you think we would be saying 8 months ago, did you think that that would be the case?
No, and it's it's kind of hard for a lot of us.
Well, it's amazing that to say that we're talking about him wrapping it up before Hillary has yet technically wrapped up hers.
Yes.
I won't say technically because I know the Bernieites have not given up hope. But I mean, did you really think we'd be having this conversation?
No.
That Trump actually is over the top, and Hillary's
right,
still
exactly.
You know, in play.
Yeah, very much in play. So there's that. Then yesterday there was the Trump campaign. Trump traveled to Bismarck, North Dakota, to make a speech about energy and talked about his energy plan, which basically, to put in a Cliff Notes version, more fossil fuels, fewer rules, fewer regulations. He mentioned that he believed that the global warming was... partially something that was started by the Chinese, and it was a bit of a conspiracy theory started by the Chinese to hamper the United States. He also talked about the importance of going back to coal in this country. And quite frankly, and without being overtly political here, it seems as though he was going against everything that was considered to be conventional wisdom, scientific conventional wisdom when it comes to the climate. So, Alan, what do you think?
Well, no, I'm just incredibly unhappy about this. And for those people who believe that, Trump is just, a guy who runs counter to the way we are and he deserves some credit for telling it like it is, this is not like it is. We are facing extinction potentially as a civilization based on our refusal to understand what global warming is. The scientific community is united in this. And when people say to us, you're talking about Trump too much, I don't think so. Because I think that there are examples in history where people, and I've said it before, think somebody's a buffoon or a clown, and then they say later on, why didn't somebody pay attention when it was important to do that? This is the moment, folks. And this is, and by the way, leading in some of the polls. So if there is ever a time to talk about this, this is it. And I'm not changing.
Well, so here's the, and you're absolutely right. I mean, he said in the, first of all, This was one of the. Are you laughing at me, Rich? I'm even trying to get a grasp on all this.
Yeah, I can tell you. There's so many things you want to say.
It's
there's
hard.
There's so many things wrong
really,
with it, and you're just trying.
It's
to...
It's really hard. First of all, this was a teleprompter speech. This is one of the rare Donald Trump teleprompter speeches. So, lest you think he was just talking off the top of his head, this was prepared.
Freestyling.
Yeah, this was prepared. So here are some of the statements.
But Joe, prepared by whom?
That's right.
Well, okay, but still, you know, assume we have all signed off, because I still maintain that half the time when he goes out, he doesn't know what he's going to say. This time, at least, and we maybe stayed with it. I don't know. Here are some of the comments. We're going to deal with real environmental challenges, not the phony ones that we've been hearing about. That was one. Regulations that shut down hundreds of coal-fired power plants and block the construction of new ones. How stupid is that? That's two. He complained about the Paris Agreement and said that he was looking to unravel it. This agreement gives foreign bureaucrats control over how much energy we use on our land in our country. No way I will allow that, which many have pointed out is not actually true, and that in the Paris Agreement there are voluntary pledges put forth by governments of these nations. But again, and he says, we've got big problems, folks. We can't be sending money all over the world. We're going to keep our money here and our jobs here and bring our jobs back. And he declared that the United States would stop all payment of U.S. tax dollars to global warming programs.
So that thing about China and it being a conspiracy started by China and their environmental situation is probably among the worst in the world. So they cook this up, and yet they are victimized by, you know, I guess their own energy policy. It just, nothing makes any sense. He is ignorant and he is evil.
Well,
that's pretty specific.
I prefer to look at him more as a free market capitalist, as opposed, which you might not think, you might think that's just redundant of what you just said. But
I'm gonna pause you just for a second, because I just want to clarify exactly what he said regarding the Chinese. The concept, this is the quote, the concept of global warming was created by and for the Chinese in order to make U.S. manufacturing non-competitive. That was the line. Go ahead, Rich.
Interesting. I think looking at a high view, from a high level, I think what he's saying is let the free market, which you would expect him to say, you know, let the free market, you know, take care of this. I would point out that, reviled though fracking has been among environmental activists, if you look at the free market effect of it, look what happened. So we started doing a lot of fracking. It brought oil prices down, brought energy prices down. And then look what the capitalist response was. Because the price of oil went down so much, it actually reduced the amount of people and the amount of jobs in fracking because it brought them under their price point. And so in a way, I would argue that the free market economy actually took care of that issue. Barbara, it's true that there's less fracking going on because of the price below which it reduced energy.
And of course, from my perspective, one makes policy based upon what is the impact on actual human beings. So in other words, instead of waiting for the market to fix something, like, for example, when it was acceptable for elementary age school age school children are children who would have been of elementary age had they gone to school to work in factories and to die in factories. Mm. That the market fixing that was going to happen because they were tiny and they were malleable and they could be exploited, and that could have gone on for a really long time. The market was not going to fix something like that. And to me, the issue with fracking, there are earthquakes in my home state of Ohio. I mean, Ohio is not earthquake country. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do, but I would actually argue that the example you give is a market of a market response.
Really?
Child labor, horrendous working conditions, and what happened. There was a response, really a grassroots response in the early socialist movement that shone a light on it. That did not come, the original impetus for the union movement, for the socialist movement, didn't come from the government. It came from the people. It came. So I see that, Barbara, as a market response, as opposed to a government legislative response in the first instance.
So market is anything that's not government, then.
Yeah.
So
the market.
Yeah, absolutely.
The market doesn't.
Any force that reacts to the market. Okay. Go ahead, Alan.
Respectfully, the market does not cure squat. If you think of it that way, then it is the market that has led the 1% in this country, or the quarter of 1%, to own so much of this country and leaving the working man and woman in a terrible situation. Now, you may say that the Bernie revolution may be coming, or the Elizabeth Warren revolution may be coming, and that's part of the market. But, you know, you can't tell me that the greed and avarice that we see that is represented in this country is a good thing. My hero is still Jor-El, who put Superman on the because his world was blowing up. And in fact, that is what is happening here. This world is blowing up. Barbara's exactly right. There are quakes as a result of this. The scientists are telling us that we do have global warming. The seas are going up. Now, don't talk to me about the market, Rich, because the market ain't doing anything about that.
Alan, I would actually argue that you have it exactly backward. It was one of the reasons of the rise of income disparity, I would argue, is because the market has not been allowed to do its work, and because of massive governmental intervention and the alleged war on poverty, which has done nothing but create more poor people. That had the market been allowed to take a little bit more of its own course, not unchecked, not fully untrammeled, but you would actually have less of income disparity. You would have fewer poor people, more working people. I think when you use massive governmental intervention to pervert the market forces, you then can't blame the free markets for not fixing your problem.
Well, let me just say you're wrong. Is that enough?
Have we had swaths?
You couldn't be more wronger. We are so happy to have you with us, Rich. Really, really, because somebody's got to say that. Somebody's got to play that role. But I got to tell you, I can't believe you believe it.
Do you believe the war on poverty has helped income inequality?
I don't know which war on poverty you're talking about. The war on poverty of the 1960s? Or are you talking about the fact that people in this country who never had health care now have it? Is that bad? Did the market do that, Rich?
I'm not convinced that wouldn't have happened organically had not the governmental programs artificially kept people out of the workforce, where from their employers, if they had them, would have been the best place for them to get health insurance in the first place.
Have we not had swaths of history where we have allowed that to play out, to see the markets take over and to help the disadvantaged in our country? And what we have found, unfortunately, is that their situation has gotten much worse, while the situation of those who were supposed to help benefit the disadvantaged, only their situation got better.
Yeah, we have certainly had. Look, and that's why I said I'm not talking about unchecked, unregulated business. I'm not one of these people who says government should just get out of the way and let business go, because business, particularly on the financial sector, has shown a propensity that if you give them some unregulated area, they will just, you know, cruise into it and abuse it for as much as they can. I think you need that regulation. But Joe, I would argue that in all those cases that you're referring to was places where we actually thought we had regulation. The regulation was ineffective. and allowed business to kind of, you know, go further than it should have been allowed to get.
And the thing is, Rich, I want to get back to what you said about people having access to jobs would have given them access to health insurance. The leading trend, from what I understand, particularly for people who are working in low-paying jobs, is to make sure that they are under the hours that one needs to get benefits. So, like, but the Walmarts and the...
But since when, Barbara? When did that start? That started... That was because of Obamacare. That was because
no,
of
wasn't.
The 20. No, that was
no,
because.
No, no,
no,
no it
that
wasn't.
Was because.
That was
of
a trend. That's been a trend, I would imagine, for at least the last 20 years.
And I would argue that if you let the market, and again, not fully unchecked, if you let the market do its work a little more, what would happen is, as businesses wanted better workers, they would have to offer better benefits, just like we do in our business. In my business, if you don't offer health care to everybody, you're not going to get the best people. And I believe that even at the kind of entry level worker, at the minimum wage level, I think that would be the case as well.
But that's not what's happening. What's happening is that low wage workers who are not making minimum wage also don't have benefits, and they're even, I think, written documents coming out of these corporations that say, instructions to employees, go get your food stamps,
Let's go to Alan, because then we only have about a minute before we go to...
Well, very quickly, we're getting letters, and I have to say, folks, civility is the rule, and you may not, because I'm not going to read them, call Rich or anyone else on this panel names. You're not going to do it. I'm not going to read your letter. So you may have a perfectly sensible letter, but if you call names, you don't get your letter on the air. Got it, everybody?
I feel like
Sorry,
that was only James. Me. I don't think they were calling Barbara names.
Well, it was only you. It was only you. But, I am sick and tired because, you know, after all, I love the idea that this station represents all sides. Trump is now leading Hillary in some polls. We have a guy on who talks a lot like Trump, and people say, get somebody who knows what he's really talking about.
As you're doing that, Rich is pointing to himself going, me? Me? who do you think?
Yeah, I get it.
All right, we got to go
I'm
to
I'm simply saying, yeah, go.
Wait, we got to go to a break. We'll come back. I promise we'll get back into this. We'll talk about the letters. We'll get more comments from, and we'll even move on to other subjects. Barbara Smith, Rich Honan, and Alan Chartok on the panel this morning. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org.
Me and my uncle went riding down South Colorado, West Texas bound. We stopped over in Santa Fe, that being the point, just about halfway.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. This morning, we have done a diagnostic test. And as far as I can see, and I'll let Alan make the final call, but I think our email is working.
Well, the email is working.
The spam filter is
rejected,
not.
I have rejected a couple of letters, and I just write back in capital letters, rejected, because of language issues. But, Rich, you must have said something that set somebody off. Anthony says, Rich is so wrong. The market never fixed anything. Child labor laws is not market response. The government is not a market force. The war on poverty is simply a reaction to capitalist desire for a slave worker mentality that capitalists need to succeed. And then he goes on at some length, but as you know, there is a limit.
Yes, 140.
John says, Rich is great. As far as I'm concerned, Rich is one of the greatest additions you've made on the show. This coming from a Swarthmore grad liberal. And please don't ever suggest that he talks like Trump. That was rude and untrue. Okay, that's
you,
what he
you
said.
You seemed hurt by
and
that.
I was saying, you know, that one cut me deep. That
well,
was
it's an insult.
and I have read a lot of the letters, so I get a lot of insults, but that one was tough.
So we ask this question a lot of the time, but and it's none of our business, and you don't have to answer this. You don't want to.
I'm not telling. Haven't decided.
Okay, all right. I was going to ask who he was going to vote for.
Yeah,
he going to vote for Trump.
I knew where you were going.
Well, all right.
Haven't decided.
But that says it all. That says it all. Haven't decided. And by the way, we're getting a bunch of letters this morning from people who are thinking that Hillary is going to get nabbed by the FBI, that it's going to get thrown open, the convention will get thrown open, that Biden will be the choice and not Bernie.
Excuse me, Alan. Alan, I said this to you like 3 months ago, and you dismissed it out of hand. It's part of that big conspiracy theory started by the Chinese.
I see. I get it. Well, you have me there, and I'll tell you why you have me there. Because anybody who says anything to me about what they told me 6 months ago or one day ago is obviously can't be met with anything from me because I don't remember. Okay, so
can I ask a quick question? How we feel? Let me just go on to sort of move the conversation just a little bit, although yet not that far. How does the panel at large feel about a possible debate between Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders? I'm looking at this. The way this developed was apparently on the Jimmy Kimmel show, where it was said, you know, do you want to debate Bernie Sanders? Trump said that would be a good idea. We could do it for charity. And then Bernie, without hesitation, said, game on. And now they're apparently, from what we hear in the reports this morning, they are working on details. Now, whether it will happen or not still remains to be seen. So all of the questions I have are basically can be, I have many, many questions about this, but the overall one is, who does this help and who does this hurt?
Well, one of the things...
Well, we know who it hurts. It hurts Hillary, period. End of discussion. And it's somewhat disappointing to me. Look, I voted for Bernie, but I'll tell you, this is very disappointing because Trump is a winner. He divides the Democrats, obviously. And of course, Bernie is a winner. He laughs all the way to the... to the convention, but Hillary gets hurt. And this is just a broader extension of what Bernie, the socialist who's been invited into the Democratic Party and who caucuses with the Democrats and is running as a Democrat, what Bernie owes to the party.
I also want to, and I want to get to Barbara on this. Does it not, when you look at the possibilities here, is Donald Trump, if this goes ahead, which it's still, I have great question as to whether it will move ahead or not, and even happen, or if this is just a bunch of silly talk. But if it does move ahead, does it not become a something where Donald Trump is using Bernie Sanders as a prop to ultimately talk to those disenfranchised Bernieites to come over to the Trump camp?
And even before you asked that, what I was going to insert here is that I've heard that some people think that this kind of a debate between them would show to the very, very adamant Bernie supporters who say that they would vote for Trump as opposed to Hillary. That's where their vote would go if Bernie is not the nominee. Some people said that a debate between them would enlighten them as to why that would not be the way to go, that would not be the right choice, that the differences between them would be so stark and so obvious that those who would say, if Bernie doesn't get it, I'm going to go to Trump, will be able to see through this debate. But that's ifs and ands. I mean, I don't think that you can even predict exactly, except I agree with Alan. The person it would hurt, I think, is Hillary.
And I say, one more time, just show one more time. I know I've said it too many times, but, Bernie is turning out to be more the Colonel Alec Guinness in the bridge on the River Kwai. He's lost sight of what this is all about. Who's going to get hurt and who's going to get helped?
At some point, do you, if you're Hillary Clinton, do you now look at this as of right now, realizing that this whole thing could fall apart in an hour, but as of right this, at this moment at 9:40 in the morning, are you having a meeting saying, should we just call up and have a debate with Sanders and get this over with and try to defuse the whole thing?
Given how close the numbers are in California, that would be an interesting move.
Do you wonder if that was part of Trump's thinking?
I don't know.
Nah.
Yeah, I don't think. I think you just wanted to debate Bernie.
You used two words in a sentence.
I know.
You
Trump's thinking. I was waiting for Barbara to.
Yeah.
Well, Barbara, as a
reacts. He fulminates. He declares. I don't know how much thought goes on.
Would you be unhappy as a Bernie supporter? Would you be unhappy with Bernie if he participated in that debate, or do you think, in your words, it would shine a light on the differences? And allow Bernie in another forum?
Frankly, you know, I really can't say, because this is a very complicated time for Bernie supporters who are not, what's the word? Really, I use the word adamant. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
The thing is, like, I always, as people perhaps have noticed, I always try to, like, analyze and think about the logic of whatever is going on.
That's why we love you.
So the thing is that, like, if I was just, like, rabid, you know. But the thing is, I'm thinking about big picture. I'm trying to think about the big picture. So as I said, frankly, I don't know. I'd like to see it personally, because I'd like to see Trump's clock get cleaned. But the thing is that that's not the whole situation. I mean, it's, you know, there's so many, like, just kind of vectors and so many elements of this. I don't know.
And there's just there's no template on it.
Right.
Well,
exactly.
Well, Jay wrote to us and said, "Dear panel, debate would be a win-win for Trump and will hurt Hillary and Democrats. If Trump is smart, strategy would be to align himself with Bernie as to what they have in common. For example, both outsiders against the establishment system is rigged, both anti-Hillary, would woo Bernie supporters to himself." That's what was said there.
Yeah, but the thing is, the thing about Bernie is that he doesn't talk about women like dogs. He does not insult every group in the society that is not the same as he. I mean, he's just such a different individual. I would assume that people might be able to grasp that. Do you see what I'm saying?
Joe from Mansfield says, "You're all being too pessimistic. Debating with Bernie Sanders will make Trump look less presidential every which way." Oh, come on. The guy's winning in some of the polls right now, and he sure doesn't look presidential. So this isn't going to make him look less or more presidential.
But isn't the other thing, too, is that this just becomes a sideshow and a lot like a world wrestling event, where you have something, you put it on in a big arena, you have this big event, the money goes to charity, and okay, all of that happens, but meanwhile, one of these people probably will not be the nominee. It just seems like it's a sideshow.
And unprecedented, too, to have a cross-party.
And a strategy.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you don't have the two parties debating before the nominations are finalized.
I agree, and I actually thought somebody, and this is not me, somebody brought this up, and I don't know these rules, but they said it might even be that Bernie's not
allowed
under and to continue to participate on the Democratic side and basically participate in an unsanctioned debate. Somebody brought that. I don't know that on my own, mm-hmm. but somebody familiar with the rules brought that up. So, and anyway, Trump said they have to come up with $15 million anyway, right? That was the number he threw out for charity.
But for the networks to pay for it.
No, first he said $10, $15 million to charity. Then he said, and then the question was, well, should the networks pay it? And he said, yeah, that would be great. He said, I actually think the networks should be paying for all these anyway, because of the amount of money that they're making on the debates.
Alan, go ahead.
Thank you for stating the case so clearly, says a writer, about the proposed Trump-Sanders debate and about how Senator Sanders is crossing a line, and then says to me, I respect your ability to recognize this in a candidate you support. I think we should all remember that I do support Bernie, and I did vote for Bernie, but I think things have changed now. I do. Isn't it possible, says John, that Bernie has separated himself from the Democratic property and is going on with his revolution? John from Saugerties. And Gene says, while everyone keeps talking about Trump and Clinton, Gary Johnson and Bill Weld are quietly getting support behind the scenes. A viable third party is just what this country needs, and I'm leaning towards that in November. And that's from David in Oneonta. Bernie has been in politics, says MG, for almost 30 years. How is he an outsider? And then we did this one already. Okay. And then Rich says, morning, all good, show as usual. But poor Rich, it seems like he got stuck in his bubble more than usual today. I still love that he's there, Beth from East Hampton.
Are you stuck in your bubble over there, Rich?
It must be these headphones.
Yeah,
they're very constricting.
Yeah. And Jesse says, to expand the concept of markets the way Rich seems to want to do is absurdly reductive. People are much more than homo economicus, and to treat them that way in trying to understand social processes, formulate policy, and assign blame where it's due, if that's what we want to do, is not just distasteful, but naive. You know, I just get the feeling that all the liberal arts majors who had all of these times in class in economics and have never had a chance ever to use any of this stuff, we're hearing from them today. It's good stuff.
Let's take a break. We'll move on to some other subjects. We'll Alan, you can call whoever's calling you and let them know you're on the radio. And we will be.
It's not in the office. It's not in the office here that I'm broadcasting from. But it is. It is annoying. And what can I tell you?
We'll be right back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Big Y, family-owned and operated with Big Y Express stations in Lee and Pittsfield. Celebrating 80 years of serving communities throughout New England, BigY.com. Amtrak, announcing Amtrak's spring and summer See New York packages, available between any two Amtrak stations in New York State and Montreal. Amtrak.com/deals for details. And Barnstar's Spring Antiques at Rhinebeck, a Memorial Day tradition presenting over 140 exhibitors of furniture, fine art, garden decor, and more, Dutchess County Fairgrounds, May 28th and 29th, barnstar.com.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. So let's talk about the lockbox and what's going on there. We have some very good news to report, and we're very pleased. As of 9:30 this morning, so just about 20 minutes ago, everything accounted in the lockbox so far is $220,428, which is really great.
It was under 170 when I was on Monday.
Yeah, it's all very
That's
nice.
Great.
So you see the glass is half full, Joe. I'm worried. I'll be honest with you. I'm worried about this. Look, we're all in this together. If everybody does something right now, I met somebody on the street just yesterday, and they said, "And how's the lockbox coming in?" I said, "Oh, it's going good." And this person said, "You know, you're right. I got to get into it. Well, you know, I got to do something right now. I'm appealing to everybody because we need to have $400,000 by next Monday morning. Is that right, Joe? Next Monday, right?
Next Monday, the drive opens on June 6th. So we have, and Alan and I were talking about this yesterday, which is that we have a holiday weekend and people are out of their routines. So we hope that if you're going to do something, you do it, you know, before you go out and have fun in the sun. And actually take part, because we need everybody to – we need to make a lot of money over the weekend so that we are close to $300,000 by the beginning of next week, so that we have a shot at this $400,000 to get the $10,000 that we have challenged.
Yeah, so how many days do we have left to do this in?
We have 7, 8, 9, 10 days. Is that right?
Wow, that's good. Yeah, that's about right. Yeah. So we're really getting close. It is so important, and it's going faster and faster and faster and faster. So, you know, I think we can make it, but it's going to depend on everyone doing something. What do you get, Joe?
Well, if you want and you pledge $100, you can get the vote package, which is a beautiful Vote for WAMC t-shirt, as well as the same logo. Thank you, Rich, for showing the viewers at home, which you can see at WAMC.org, which is also the place where you can make your pledge. But it's a t-shirt. It's a black t-shirt with a white logo, very stark. It has the WAMC logo as well as Vote for WAMC on the back of the shirt. And we also have that in the convenient mug format. That's a $100 pledge. And you can just go to the lockbox and put whatever you can into it to help us get to the $400,000 point before June 6th, which would allow us to have a good, pretty good crack. The reason, I think, Alan, you mentioned this, but just so people know, the reason we're looking for $400,000 is that's what we did this time last year. We're trying to do it just a little bit more. And that was, a five-day drive. So if we can do that and then try to shave a couple days off, this could be very good.
Yes, and as I've said so many times, don't be telling me we're on the air too much and I ask you, did you put something in the lockbox? And you say, blah, blah, blah.
And I have to tell you, that is exactly the sound that people make when you ask that question. It is quite amusing. All right, let's go to some other stuff. Let's see what we can. I will admit that I'm having trouble finding things in my mailbox, only because there's so much mail. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, we could read mail from now until the fun drive, just on this morning's. But the one thing I keep hearing from people, which I really love, is it's great to have this kind of a debate.
Yes.
It's great to have all sides being represented. It is what we strive for here. So it's great.
All right. Couple of issues that I want to get to in the 10 minutes that we have left. First of all, President Obama was in Hiroshima this morning, and this was a historic visit. We have talked about it in the past when the trip was originally announced. And this morning, for those of you who are listening early on Morning Edition, we ran it live. But a very, I think, poignant moment, and really something that was quite gripping to watch, and obviously historic. And I guess the question, Alan, is ultimately, what does this mean for continuing relations, and also just for the president's thoughts on war, as well as getting over something, talking about something, to offering a chance for reconciliation.
Joe, when we were listening this morning, I literally had tears in my eyes. This man is truly a poet. One could ascribe this to politics, or one could ascribe this to relations with the Japanese and against the North Koreans, which pundits have been doing. But, you know, if you listen to this man, this is his credo. This is what he believes. It is one of the reasons that his polling numbers keep going up and up and up, because people have finally got it that he wants to do what's right. And I think that that's what we heard this morning.
Barbara?
Unfortunately, I didn't hear the speech. I heard that it was very moving. So, as much as I'd wanted to, I didn't have an opportunity.
It was very early. Mm-hmm. It was very early. Rich?
I wasn't aware that our relations with Japan needed healing. I thought that they were one of our strongest trading partners. I don't know exactly what it is that we're putting to rest there. It's very upsetting to me, once again, to see the president take the opportunity on foreign soil to, in effect, remind people, you know, what a bad country America is. And I know, Barbara, you look at it a different way.
But, I do.
But And I know that this was a And I know that this was somewhat more nuanced or greatly more nuanced than times when he's done this before. But the thing that really stood out to me is if you're speaking against nuclear proliferation, which I think we all agree with, and if you're speaking against war, which we all agree with, and yet you're a person who worked so hard over the last couple of years to start a nuclear weapons program in such a rogue nation as Iran, I don't understand how you reconcile, you know, what you're saying versus your actions. I thought it was very troubling.
Okay, what? Okay, so one of the biggest debates in American history is, should we have dropped the bomb? We would have lost maybe a million people, the estimates are, of our armed forces if we didn't do it. The Japanese did do Pearl Harbor, but many of us have really questioned the wisdom. Could it have been done differently? Could we have knocked out an atoll somewhere? Could we have shown the Japanese? But whatever you believe, it doesn't much matter. It does have the effect of his going over there. He didn't apologize, but it does have the effect of saying, we really are, as human beings, need to put this to rest. And, you know, Rich, I don't see it as an apology at all. I just see it as the kind of sensitivity which makes the rest of the world sit up, pay notice, and say, this is really a good thing that he's doing.
And I don't see it as an apology at all. My understanding is that he went there. He's the first president to have gone there since the atrocities happened. And the reason I say it's an atrocity is because the primary casualties were civilians. And they also bombed Nagasaki. People forget about that. So it's just, you know, it's really hard to talk about that level of human destruction and human tragedy and annihilation. And there are people who are still living with the physical and emotional consequences of what happened. But I don't think he didn't go to apologize. It was clear. I look forward now to reading every line of the speech because I think there is something to be said. The article that we had that was sent last night talked about Willy Brandt going to the Warsaw Ghetto.
Yeah, I thought that was incredibly offensive. I thought that was incredible. Willie, to have someone to compare the position of the United States with the position of Germany in World War II, I could not think of something more offensive than that.
We're referring to an
article that we haven't discussed.
Now, we have 20 seconds before we have to go. So we're going to end there, unfortunately. But thank you very much, everybody, for being part of the program this morning. I hope you have a great holiday weekend. A reminder about the lockbox. We need it. We need you desperately, don't we, Alan?
We need everybody. And when we say we're all in it together, we mean we're all in it together. And, Rich, I want to thank you for showing up. It's always great to have you here.
My pleasure.
Yeah. And Barbara, thank you for being here. Have a lovely weekend. Alan, thank you. See you on Tuesday. We'll be back with the panel on Tuesday morning. We'll be back with the roundtable after this short break.